I know you don't have much time, so let's get right to the meat of the issue here. The U.S. and Japan agreement in principle. After this morning's announcement, what are the steps to fair and reciprocal trade agreement for the ag industry?
Yes, well, today, first of all, I'll say this is a great day for U.S. agriculture and U.S. farmers and ranchers because now they have new and expanded access to one of the largest and most affluent markets in the world, and of course, that's Japan. I witnessed a little bit earlier President Trump and Prime Minister Abe sign the agreement. And so the next steps are the final I's and T's are going to be dotted. And then we move on to implementation. And certainly we want to, the intent is to implement it just as quickly as possible. So we'll be looking for that by the first of the year.
So you mentioned the final I's and T's dotted. I guess that happens in the meantime between now and 2020.
That actually happens over the next 2 weeks. So that's happening very, very quickly. This is very common on trade negotiations where you reach agreement on all the terms, and then there's just the final language just needs to be scrubbed by the legal counsels on both sides, and you move forward with the agreement.
Farmers want to know what is included for them specifically.
Yeah, it is, just to put it in perspective, right now we export about $14 billion worth of agriculture products to Japan. Around six of that 14 is already duty-free. And under this agreement, tariffs on another $7 billion will either be eliminated or substantially reduced and make sure that we're competitive there with other competitors and free trade agreements Japan has with other countries. The big winners, just for example, some of them are beef producers. It's our number one market in the world, and this keeps us competitive and reduces the tariff down from around 38% down to 9%. Pork producers, number one market in the world for U.S. pork producers, worth $1.8 billion of exports, and this eliminates staged elimination of the tariff and keeps us competitive with all of our competitors in that market. Wheat producers, Japan is either the number one or number two market for U.S. wheat producers, and in addition to keeping us there competitive, we export around $800 million of wheat. We'll have a new duty-free quota just for U.S. wheat, and we'll have our tariff reductions as well to keep us competitive with any exporting other competitor nations. Dairy is a big winner. Dairy, we export about $750 million worth of dairy products to Japan already, and we're going to have the same tariff treatment and tariff reductions on hard cheeses, on mozzarella. We'll have some specific quotas for whey and processed cheese. We'll have access to a new quota for skim milk powder as well. And so it really is a great agreement. Ethanol, also big there, of course, in the Midwest. And Japan has agreed to eliminate the 10% tariff that they have on ethanol. So it really covers a whole range of commodities and is a big win for producers.
So we talked about a few things included in the agreement. Was there anything that wasn't included that you'd like to see changed or worked through in the next 2 weeks?
Well, it wouldn't be in the next few weeks. Like I said, right now we're under this agreement. There'll be about 90% of dutiable trade that we have of agriculture products. The tariffs will be either eliminated or reduced substantially so that we're competitive. That leaves the other 10% and of some products that are exported there. While we have this harvest on these products that I've run through and are going to be locking in these gains, the intent is to continue negotiations and cover other products in the future as well. And so we hope to get at that other 10% as the U.S. and Japan continue to negotiate. But these tariffs, these tariff reductions, and this agreement with Japan is moving forward, even as we move forward and try to negotiate on other items as well in that remaining 10%.
So mostly it's just working out the details of the 90% in the next 2 weeks, to clarify.
It is just scrubbing the language. It's very common in trade agreements that you agree on the terms, you agree on the tariff reductions, and then that has to be put into the legally binding language of an agreement. The lawyers need to take a look at it, and so that's what's happening in the next 2 weeks as we move forward to conclude and make sure that the agreement can be implemented with the goal of beginning at the first of the year. Between the United States and Japan for next, I mean, they just concluded this agreement. They will, the teams, negotiating teams will be continuing, and the legal counsels from the respective sides will be continue to be in touch as they work to do the legal scrub on the language.
Okay, but nothing formal for the final piece of that, just kind of
That's
back
right.
and forth.
We had the formal signing just took place between President Trump and Prime Minister Abe.
Thanks for taking time to answer questions on that. And Steve, I had a few other questions for you as well, aside from the U.S. and the Japan trade agreement. What is the status of the RFS discussions with Larry Kudlow, the EPA, and USDA?
Yeah, we've had lots of meetings with the White House and with stakeholders and EPA on that. Of course, the White House has heard and met along with us and EPA and others with a lot of the farm state senators and governors. They've also met with the oil state senators. Really right now, it continues to, folks are continuing to work on it. So nothing to announce right now, but certainly we're pushing for an agreement to be done and to be reached, and for biofuel producers and farmers to have the certainty that's provided by the renewable fuel standard.
What's the holdup?
Well, as you know, that there's always two sides on every issue. You have long-running and long-standing opposition to the renewable fuel standard from oil state senators. You have very strong support for the renewable fuel standard from agriculture, from farmers, and the biofuel industry, and us at the U.S. Department of Agriculture as well. We see it very much as a win-win situation. It seems clear to us, but we also know that there are those that oppose it. And it is, classic on any issue. You have some people in favor and some people opposed. I think the president is working to try to find a way that delivers on the promise of the renewable fuel standard and where it isn't undercut, but also to address any concerns that the oil industry might have about RIN prices or other issues like that.
Mr. Sinski, finally, I'm sure you are following as well, but it's been a challenging harvest for farmers and ranchers in the Northern Plains, in particular Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota area, and wheat quality issues for sure. What details do farmers need to be aware of, or is there anything at work at USDA on the crop insurance side of things addressing that farmers need to know about?
Well, certainly one of the things that we have ongoing that farmers need to be aware of and certainly hopefully are able to take advantage of is for those that have been prevented from planting, we were able under the disaster legislation and provisions that we just announced a few weeks ago for the a top-up on the indemnity payments that might be made to producers. And so if a farmer was prevented from planting, not only do you get your normal indemnity payment, but another 10% on top of that, as well under the disaster legislation, and up to another 5% if the producer chose the harvest price option. So another 15% top up on the indemnity payments are one of the things that could be done. Of course, we do have just our standing crop insurance program and that farmers make use of. And again, encourage farmers to make sure that they're in close contact with their crop insurance agents to see if they're below any of the loss thresholds and their insurable losses.